You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
A little surprising, and I think what surprised the conferences, and in case you don't know what we're talking about, is the Big Ten announced today that they're going to a conference-only schedule. I think what was a surprise was how early this decision was made. And you're hearing a lot of chatter on social media that officials from the other conferences were kind of surprised by the announcement, taken aback, a little upset
that it came out,
that they made this announcement, because they were all kind of trying to be in lockstep with each other. Not necessarily to just always be unified, but just to kind of look, we're all trying to figure this out together, let's figure it out together, and that they came out with this announcement today.
But knowing that the conferences are not lockstep because they all have their own agenda, and now with the Big Ten doing this, you're going to hear the other conferences in the next day or two say the same thing.
Right. Well, Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, who was the one who broke the Big Ten story, she just a little bit ago came out with, she tweeted again that she's hearing that the Pac-12 is going to make a similar announcement in the next few days. I did go to the Pac-12 office and just got a basic statement that they haven't, you know, that they're just evaluating, yada, yada, yada. But how can you think that they're not going to do the same thing?
Didn't we talk about this earlier this week?
Of course we did.
Yeah.
And the ACC is going to do the same thing. And then, you know, the SEC and the Big 12 the Big 12 are holding out, but how can you not?
So the impact itself is there's going to be some big games, not really involving Arizona, but other guys in the conference.
Right. There's already some big games that are off the board for the Pac-12. Michigan was going to play at Washington, and Ohio State was going to play at Oregon. Those are the only two games that affect the Pac-12. But, you know, you've got other games now. You got teams that have openings. You have all kinds of other things that can happen. Notre Dame, for instance, they were going to play Wisconsin. Now, let's say the Pac-12 does the same thing, which I 100% believe that that's what's going to happen. Notre Dame's also going to lose games against USC and Stanford. What's going to happen in Notre Dame?
Right.
I was going through the list of non-conference games that would be impacted for the Pac-12, and there's a whole bunch of them. And a lot of these West Coast games. BYU has three games against Pac-12 teams, and so does Hawaii, with Arizona being one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Texas A&M plays Colorado, TCU plays Cal. You got Alabama and USC, which is, you know, one of the big games of the year. What's going to happen to those games?
Well, let's say this. This came out just today. Not that it's a big shocker, because we've been talking about it. A lot of people have been talking about it. Now, okay, so at least they have something in their back pocket that they might still have a season. Wait, give me 3 weeks, and we'll see what happens.
Well, right.
Because another domino could fall.
Well, sure. And that's the big thing now. So now, you know, some of this is being played that, okay, this is sort of a first step towards not having a college football season, or,
right,
you know, that's the worst case scenario, obviously, or moving it to the spring. And that, you know, it's some people are saying it's almost impossible to think that even a conference only schedule can be played.
Right, and there's be seven, eight games each, probably.
Well, you know, the Big Ten has not put out its schedule and said what they're doing. They said, now we're going to start working on a schedule. The word is that they want to get a 10-game schedule. I don't know how you get 10 games in. Right. So, you know, Pat Forty, who writes for Sports Illustrated, already, you know, shot out a big piece on this and said, you know, the options for having even a season in the fall are dwindling.
Sure.
Now that you've taken this step, saying that. So he spent some time discussing, let's say you move it to the spring, what do you have? And you know, his thing with just weather conditions and those kinds of things, that you're talking 6 to 9 games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean,
that you won't be able to play more than that.
The problem with all that is there's no right or wrong answer. I think the one thing that you're a big fan, you love the game, you're just hoping for a season.
I'm hoping for a season, but I really want it to be in the fall.
Right. But you'll take a spring?
I'll take 6 games in the fall over 10 games in the spring.
Really?
I would.
Why is that?
Because that football's supposed to be in the fall.
Okay.
That's why. Football's supposed to be in the fall. Now, but if you think about it, and again, another point made on social media, can you imagine how the athletic departments will be stretched if every single sport...
Totally.
Is playing in the fall. Because remember,
totally agree with that.
Winter sports overlap the spring sports. Mm-hmm. And now if you've also got the fall sports going at the same time, how do you manage those from a staffing standpoint?
No question. I think that was my biggest concern when they decided to or thought about going to the spring. Look at basketball is king here. You have a Saturday game on a basketball day or night. What do you do with football?
Do you play it on Friday night?
Right.
Do you play it on Sunday?
Right.
Do you play Monday night? What do you do?
Yeah, exactly. No question. Especially for a basketball-heavy community.
Right. You know, and Arizona's, you know, among a few schools that are, you know, Kentucky would be like that. Kentucky, mm-hmm. I think, has got a program similar to Arizona's,
right.
and a basketball program similar to Arizona. Even Duke is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are they going to do when basketball is king, mm-hmm. and football has to be fit in there somewhere?
You're correct. They'll probably play Thursdays and Fridays.
Thursday. But look at, you know, in the Pac-12. Conference games are Thursdays and Saturdays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the scheduling people that'll have to be busy figuring it out. But I think that is the last. The last resort is canceling and everything.
Right.
The next would be playing in spring. I'm putting some money on spring.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the smart money right
now.
What do you play?
Craps.
Yep.
So do you kind of hedge bets and all that stuff? I don't know the game.
I don't.
But can you?
I don't bet against myself.
Okay, so but people do.
People do.
Yes, yeah, I don't.
They
I don't either. So I'm
I
not.
Don't, I don't. I don't.
But
bet
that's
against
what
myself.
I would do if I was. I bet a little on the fall, a little on the spring, and even a little on no football
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, I. You know, it's as positive as I want to be as I don't know.
You've been positive all this time.
I want to be hopeful of all this. I have a hard time believing we're going to have much of a season in the fall. Now, if we can turn things around, what this is doing is buying time.
Yeah.
You know, so now you can start a season in maybe late September. Again, I think the Big Ten is going to have to, you know, pump the brakes a little bit and realize they're not going to be able to play 10 games. One of the big ideas behind this is to buy yourself some time. I know the main impetus of this is to have more control over testing and the standards that each of the schools are going to have to do this. But I just feel you're going to have to push back and go to and may start thinking 8 or 9 game seasons.
Oh yeah, yeah, no question.
Yeah.
So we're looking at mid September. We've kind of always thought with Hawaii, Texas Tech, Stanford,
and Portland State are gone.
Yeah, Portland State.
So you know the season will start mid to late September.
On a scale of shocked, it can't be a 1, maybe a 2.
Oh, knock me over with a feather, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this was. We knew this was coming.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised the Pac-12 didn't announce it first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really am. I thought the Pac-12 would be the first to go. So now that the Big Ten has done it, how is everybody else not going to say, okay, we got to do this too?
Can you, the one thing that I heard coming in, I think Michelle, the Arab who broke the story. So can you still find a genuine champion at the end of the season?
Well,
I think so.
That's a big part of the discussion. You got to play enough games though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Major League Baseball cut their season by,
60%,
So who knows? I think you can.
Yeah, I think because you're not playing. Well, in fact, it might be even a better champion because you're not playing against the teams that you should beat anyway.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's, maybe this will get us to that that playoff where you give every conference champion a spot and then go get 3 at-large teams. Because if teams aren't playing out of conference, how do you know which conference
is the best conference? That's a 16-team tournament,
right.
1, 2, 3, the three
no,
more games?
No, 18-team tournament. 18-team
tournament?
Yeah.
18, 1, 8, 2, 3,
yeah.
3 games?
Yeah, five league champions and 3 at-larges.
I like it.
I've been an advocate
of that for
a long time.
That could work if this darn disease went away, this pandemic went away.
Right.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Come back with Mr. Thompson, Scott Thompson.
I'm anxious to talk to him. It's been another one of those guys. It's been 30 plus years since we've had a chat.
Okay, bring out the Kleenex. 10:30 The Voice.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance company in Tucson.
For the month of July, we're going to donate 2% of our sales to a local charity from in-stock purchases.
Come shop at our store and work with our amazing sales team.
Dustin, David, Brian, Alex, me, and Peter.
You can choose from a list of local charities for us to donate to.
The only way we can give back is if you shop local.
Only at Tucson Appliance, where our low price is your priority.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll-free at 888-881-5765.
Hey, welcome back to Why on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. And now on the phone, we have former U of A assistant coach Scott Thompson. Coach, how the heck you doing?
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Fine. Welcome to the show. This is your first time, so we'll be easy on you. I know you're an elderly man now.
I appreciate that, but don't do that on my account.
Great to have you. You know Jay.
Scott,
hey, how you doing?
It's been 100 years about, right?
It has been.
So tell us a little bit about what you've been up to. I'm looking through some of your stuff, and I saw you recently were inducted or going to be inducted into the Quad Cities Hall of Fame back home in Iowa and stuff like that. And I know you're CEO of a company that's doing a lot of work with cancer and that type of stuff. Tell us some of the things you've been up to.
Well, yeah, I've had kind of three phases in my life. One was coaching for 23 years. I was a D1 coach, and I was in my last coaching year. They diagnosed me with stage 3 colon cancer, and it had gotten in all my lymph nodes. And actually, it was kind of about the same time Bobby Olson was going through hers. And with her cancer, and I was just fortunate to make it. And when I toyed with being an athletic director, and then I started raising all kinds of money. And for the last 15, 16 years, I've been raising money for cancer and cancer research, one here at the University of Arizona, and then I ran their foundation at UCLA, and then got recruited to go to University of Florida. So I was living in Gainesville, and Rebecca, my wife, was U of A grad. We love Tucson. We decided to come back a few years ago, and I've been doing some consulting. I've been doing some work with Coaches Versus Cancer, and then I work in the financial world at UBS Financial Services here in Tucson. So I'm a financial coach now, if you could call it that. And I work with a lot of people with their retirements and businesses and things like that. So I stay pretty busy.
I'm assuming, I know you've been out of the coaching business in terms of basketball, but I am assuming that you probably miss it a tad or two.
Well, once you're a coach, Steve, you're always a coach. And the thing with the Coaches Versus Cancer, it keeps me close to
the game.
Close to it, yeah. Close to the game. Close to you develop friends, and there's a camaraderie, and it's college sports. You know, my father was a coach. I grew up that way. It's just something that's kind of bred into me. And then being here in Tucson at the U of A when when we restarted the program, that's always been something that's been, I guess Rebecca and I feel this is kind of is really our hometown. So we love it here and have many good friends and things like that.
It's fun. Jay, earlier this afternoon, Jay sent me a clip in your induction to the Hall of Fame up there, and I'm thinking, oh, of course you were the son of a coach. You had no choice but to be a coach.
Well, both my parents were teachers, and I grew up, and my heroes were those heroes in the '60s, and I was playing basketball at the University of Iowa when a guy by the name of Lute Olson got the job, and nobody knew who he was. And
hell, they were saying Luke Olson. What? Weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing about Coach Olson is he's been one of those guys that can it just take guys like me that didn't have, I couldn't jump very high. I wasn't very fast, but I was a pretty good shooter. And he helped me become an all Big Ten player and get drafted and things like that. So, you know, I bought into what he was doing. And what's funny, when I got cut by the Pistons, my first job, I was at Notre Dame. I was at the University of Notre Dame. And when I was there, we went to the Final Four with Lambeer and Trapuka and Woolridge and Hanslick and all those. And I recruited John Paxson. A lot of that history I've been part of and really proud of it.
So, Scott, as I was reading through your history, I was looking at the stuff about your days in Moline and Wharton Fieldhouse, and you talked about it being full and all kind of that kind of stuff. So immediately, you know, the movie Hoosiers came to mind. I mean, playing basketball in the Midwest in a place like Iowa, in a town like that, I mean, is that a true picture of what it was like for you guys? Or, you know, was it kind of small townish and, you know, everybody was thinking about basketball and that type of stuff?
Well, it's different parts of the country. People are really into their specific sports. Like when you're in the Midwest, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, high school basketball was really big. When you're in Texas, my experience of living in Texas, you know, high school football is so big.
Right.
When I was living up in the Northeast, you know, it's hockey and lacrosse is so big. And when I grew up in the Midwest, that's what it was. It was, I mean, my high school, that Wharton Fieldhouse, sat 6,500 people, and it was packed every game. It was packed.
That's huge. I can't imagine 6,500 seat.
It was packed.
High school arena.
It was unbelievable. But now that was before ESPN. So on Friday nights, people weren't watching anything on ESPN. They were there at the high school game, and it was the big social. Now, the area that I grew up in, that Quad Cities, is about 300,000.
Right.
And world headquarters of John Deere is there, and so it was. It's pretty sports. They love their sports, but it was just a special place and a special time.
When did basketball as a come to you as something that would be a profession for you? I mean, when did you feel like I'm going to have a basketball career, being playing, coaching, and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I was training to be a high school teacher and maybe a high school coach. And shoot, I had Webster City, Iowa, offer me a job at Webster City. And I thought that was big time. And the other thing is that I had a summer job. I didn't even know I got drafted. And,
wow.
You know, I was drafted by the Pistons. It was there. I was fourth round, but now it'd be second round, because of the, there were just fewer teams, And I didn't even know I got drafted, so it wasn't even a big deal. That was, you know, was a big deal because you wanted to be playing against the best and stuff like that. But and then when I got cut, I did play with Athletes in Action for a year, which was a great experience. And then that year when that was over, I was either going to get into coaching. You know, I was going to be a grad assistant or, you know, something like that. And you know, again, I was blessed that I got on at Notre Dame. I was their third assistant, you know, recruiting like crazy. It was great. I thought I was really in great shape making $6,000 a year.
Wow.
Well, that's what I make now. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Hey, so earlier you were talking about you're a guard playing for Lute. You couldn't jump. You're not athletic, but you could shoot. So you're telling me you were Steve Kerr before Steve Kerr was Steve Kerr.
Well, I've spent a lot of time with two guys, John Paxson and Steve Kerr.
Right, right. In fact, Steve replaced John.
I feel that I had something to do with that.
Well, there you go.
No, I mean, I'm confident I did. I couldn't break Steve of, he kept watching the basketball, and I tried to break him of that habit, and he shot so well, I said, heck with it. Just keep shooting like that. Later, you know, years later, he says, well, Larry Bird shoots like that, and whatever. My biggest thing was just his balance and his footwork and things like that. But that's how I learned. I mean, my hero was a guy named Rick Mount.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I remember that name.
Yeah.
And you talk about a pure shooter. When I grew up when Mount, Maravich, and Alcindor, those were my heroes. And basketball was – and so staying – near the game is something that I love.
I hope you don't have any dinner plans because we're going to ask you to stick around on the other side. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to talk to you about some of your time here. I'm really interested how some of that went for you. So let's have a chance to talk to you after the break.
Great. Let's take a quick break here on 1030 Voice. Come back with Coach Thompson.
Camille Rivas Rutherford with Coldwell Banker Realty has been one of the top producing real estate agents in Tucson, Oro Valley, Marana, and Vail for more than 20 years. Let her help you find your dream home in southern Arizona. Her passion and enthusiasm for real estate has helped her become one of the most respected and trusted realtors in the area. And she was recently named a recipient of Coldwell Banker's 2019 International President Circle Award. Camille's approach to sales and marketing and selling or buying a home is second to none. Give her a call at 520-250-5192.
Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. And on the phone we have Mr. Scott Thompson, Coach Thompson, from the U of A back in the day. And Coach, so when I think of Moline, I think of Scott Thompson, I think of Jim Rosborough, and a guy named Travis Wilson. Does that ring a bell?
Yes. Yeah.
What's in the water in Moline?
I don't know. Isn't that interesting? Coach Roz was from Moline. He's a handful of years before me. And then we worked together at University of Iowa. And Travis Wilson came afterward. I didn't know much about him, but I knew he was a good player. And I don't know that much about Travis.
Yeah, but what's in the water at Moline? It's did A.C. Earl come from Moline?
Yes, A.C. Earl did. And actually, next door, Don Nelson grew up in Rock Island.
Wow.
And nice. So yeah, that's where Don Nelson's home is.
So, Scott, I was reading the, you know, that you thought Lute was a little, I think, as you put it, off his marbles to come to Arizona way back yes, in the day. Yes. But, you know, I mean, you guys basically changed this town. And so when you got here, you know, what were some of your, you know, first impressions of Tucson? What did you think of the place? What did you think of, you know, the U of A and this big move that you had just made?
Well, we were really good at Iowa, and they had just promised Lute they were going to build the arena, which they did. We didn't weren't in there the full season, and he came in after we had lost at the last second to Villanova in the Sweet 16, and he had said Dempsey did a great job of recruiting him to come down and look at the place, and he came back, called the team, had a staff meeting. He says, "I'm going to Arizona," and I thought he'd lost his marbles because I knew how bad Arizona was, and so yeah, he said, "Do you want to come with?" And I, you know, I was young and single, and you know, let's go, and came down, and he really had me as the inside guy. I was doing all the scouting and the game prep, but on top of that, it was ordering the uniforms and the redoing the locker room and redoing the recruiting materials and all those things. And they couldn't figure it out why we needed to have 4-color recruiting brochure because 2 had always been good enough before. And why we needed extra VCRs. Well, they didn't have any in the office.
Right.
And then I, you know, we were thinking, well, I was thinking, let's be snazzy. We can start from scratch. And so I'm saying, let's order socks that say cats on the side. And let's do some of this stuff that, you know, let's make ourselves, you know, new and that kind of thing. But, you know, believe me, those first few practices in the first, in December, Lute and I were looking at each other going, holy cow, did we make the right decision?
I wanted to say that. So, there's a couple of quick questions. You know, after the first practice, I remember writing that Lute went into the locker room, probably talked to you and put his hands in his head and said, what the heck did we just do?
When I put carpet on the wall?
After your first practice. Huh? After your first practice here.
Oh, after the first practice, no question. No, and then another time was when we were walking out together for the first game, and, you know, there were a few thousand people there, but a whole lot of empty seats, and right. We looked at each other going, did we make the right decision?
Well, I'm looking at the schedule, and you guys lost. You won the opener.
Was it Athletes in Action?
Lost to Athletes in Action, then beat NAU, then lost 6 in a row. I mean, what were you thinking at that point?
Well, the game at Providence was a tough one. We scheduled Pan American, and we lost to them at home.
Yep.
And we were, but you know, again, we had Eddie Smith and Pete Williams, and David Haskin, Brock Bronkhorst. I mean, we had some guys returning. And, you know, Steve Kerr wasn't Steve Kerr yet.
Right.
And so we were just kind of finding ourselves. And I used to open the gym night after night after night. We'd have study table. I'll tell you a couple of things that I'd do. We'd have study table. I'd open the gym night after night and teaching confidence in their shooting. And again, that being my specialty, doggone, we needed guys that really had confidence. And they still kid me to this day about, because my thing was always we're the best shooters in the pack. We're the best shooters in the pack. Well, I knew we weren't, but I wanted our guys to keep that confidence going and keep shooting. But I also feel we taught really good fundamentals. And how about this? I'd do that, and then I'd call up George Kalel. George and I would meet for a bite eat, you know, because he used to work till late at night.
Right.
And I'd be asking George, now tell me about Tucson, and how about the fans, and who should get involved with the program, and how are we going to, you know, build this and things like that, and just kind of – picking his brain, because that's part of it. And I was asked to speak at all the different Rotary clubs and Kiwanis clubs, and they'd be going, "Hey, I am mad at Ed Dempsey. He's charging us extra for tickets this year, and you know what? I'm going to give up my tickets."
Yeah, right.
Just hold on. Don't be getting rid of your tickets now. So that first time, and then as the season went on, you know, we kind of came together. And again, Lute has that way of being able to take what we have, and we just played together, and we played the motion offense, and we played some matchup defense, and we shot the ball. It's just fundamental stuff, and
simple,
and we just got better.
Simple basketball. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, but there were some good teams in the league, because Washington was really good, yeah.
Right?
And Oregon State, Ralph
Oregon
Miller
State was
Oregon
still
State.
Good, right?
Yeah, they were really good, and every game we went out, it just wasn't an easy. Those weren't easy games. But we made some progress, and that was key the first year. And then the night early January, I'm in my room or my home, and I get a call from George Khalil about 2 or 3 in the morning, and he says, "Hey, have you seen? I just listened to the radio. Steve Kerr's father."
Yeah.
What? And I couldn't believe it. And I call up Steve, and he says, "How do you know?" And I said, "I'm on my way." And so I was the first person to Babcock that night. And then, you know, just kind of being there to comfort him and helping him through that. And then we called up Coach and so forth. It was really, and then when he came out that next game against ESU, and then the whole thing kind of started feeling good, because it was just all good fundamental basketball. And again, different from now, where the expectations are so high, and there weren't any expectations. So anything we did was positive.
Right.
No question. And then Jay was part of this. I had not arrived to do the basketball team yet, but you went on this magical ride, 87-88.
Well,
no, you were gone for that year, right?
I was.
You left after the 87 there, season.
We got better. We made the NCAA tournament the next year two, and then year three we won the conference
won the
championship.
League, right?
I mean, won the pack, and then the coach asked me to be his guy on the world championship team, and I ran the trials and got married. I met a wonderful young co-ed who just had graduated and we got married, and then we have training camp here and then we're off to Spain, to France and Spain for the world championship. So, I mean, and it was great. And I say this, you know, I've been there with Steve at some of his most difficult times. You talk about perseverance. I carried him off the floor with Oscar Schmidt after he blew out his knee in the semis against Brazil. And I carried him into the locker room, and the team physician said, "Gee, Steve, this may be a career-ending injury."
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Here's the thing. If that doesn't happen, 88 never happened.
Well, we talked about that.
You're going exactly where I was going to go next, because we talked about that yesterday. There was a what if. So, yeah, what if Steve Kerr is on the 87 team? That was your last year with the team, correct?
Right.
What if he's on the 87 team and isn't here for 88? How things change?
I think it just slows the progress down a little bit, but the 88 Final Four really launched it into warp speed.
Right.
But if that 88 Final Four doesn't happen, I think, or 88. I think it just takes a few more years to get it going.
You know, the 86. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think it happens if Steve's not, because right. I mean, look at that year he had.
Yep.
And look at, I mean, all the his leadership and his lack of turnovers and, you know, all those different things. It's just he was such a great leader on the team, obviously having Sean there and the other veterans that had been around, Judd and Matt and, you know, well, yeah, what was that? That was Matt's first year.
Yeah, Matt Muehlbach was a freshman.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that 86-87 team, that was the first year that I covered the team. So that was when you and I met. And that was, you know, that was our only experience with each other was that season. But as I recall, the thing that characterized that team was it was missing that piece that Steve Kerr brought to the team, because that team, as I recall, blew a lot of second half leads and stuff like that.
Well, that's where I wanted to ask, because look, he's on that team. Don't you think that team kind of makes a great run?
Yeah, I do. No, I think if he was there, but you know what? Here's what we got is our point guards, Bruce Frazier and Kenny Lofton.
Right.
We were very light at that position.
Right. Right. But
As you've all seen, during the point, you know, you got to be strong at that position. And that year, we just couldn't find our bearings.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
Yeah, I mean, we lost in the tournament. We lost in the Pac-12 tournament. We were 10 at the time, and then we lost the first round to UTEP at home.
Yep. That was a tough year for a lot of folks, and made you guys a little harder to cover because, you know, lost a lot of games that you really didn't think that you should. But, you know, on the other hand, again, people will always remember that it was sort of building to, you know, to the 1988 season and having Steve around. Do you ever look back on that and think, you know, I wish I'd been part of that? You were onto your, you know, head coaching career. I get it. But, you know, as you sit here today, do you ever, you know, feel like you missed an opportunity to be part of something that was incredible, even though it's easy to say you had a big hand in building that?
Well, that's the piece, because what's not easy is that's kind of the mark for when modern Arizona basketball started. Well, those 4 years before, there was a lot of investment, and so I'm proud of that big part of that, being part of that. But yeah, I mean, I took Rice, and Rice had 19 straight losing seasons, and I think I won six games my first playing against Arkansas and Fice Lama Jam and so forth. So I was watching the Wildcats go on, and I felt like I was a big part of that. I just wasn't there.
You coach alongside Burmeister?
Yes.
Yeah, so you obviously know he passed not too long ago. Just, he was one of those great coaches, too. Good guy, good Creek coaches.
Yeah, Ken was a very unique guy, we were fortunate to have him, fortunate to work together. And, it was Ken, me, and Ricky Birdsong.
Yeah, yeah.
Another guy who's not here. Yeah.
No, I know. It's sad, because though it was just such a great a great time and good people and you know, the Tucson fans and the city, everything was really a very positive experience, and I'm glad to be back.
Well, for what it's worth, Scott, for, you know, I've been here for the duration, both as a fan, as a journalist, and now as a radio guy. And, you know, I think, you know, that coaching staff, I think people have always recognized that that coaching staff, you know, is really the one that built, you know, what Arizona is today, even though guys like, you know, Kevin O'Neill came along.
McAndrews was here, too.
Tony McAndrews was here. Jesse Evans and some of those guys, you know, were here and part of the, you know, big teams that won the national championship. But I think, though, you know, you just mentioned those three assistant coaches, and I think you guys are pretty well recognized as the guys who who had a big hand in building this.
There were some great coaches that came, you know, the great staff members, the great assistants. I mean, you go through it. There's one common denominator.
Loot.
Yep. I mean, again, it just, there's one common denominator.
Sure. And no, you know, and
you can't argue with that.
So. I think that he was very good at picking you guys and knowing how you guys would work with each other.
Yeah, but I also think that he did. And then, but he was just, as players, he was a very good leader. And, I mean, in new strengths and weaknesses and how things fit and things like that. So, but it's funny how many times I think Ken was one of the top assistants in the country, and then he left, and then I was one of the top assistants in the country, I was gone, and Ricky, and then Kevin, and then, I mean, you go right down the
right
the line. It's just how you know it worked.
Right, no question.
And so we were very fortunate to be part of that.
Coach, we really appreciate you coming on. I'm sure the listeners were happy about the good old days. We love talking about the good old days.
Yeah, we do. Because, you know, Steve and I are a couple of old guys, so right. And remembering all this time. But, Coach, it was great to have you on. Great to talk to you again. It's been too long.
We got
to
have him in studio when we can have people in studio.
We got to get you back.
I'd enjoy that. So you've got my number, and I'd be happy to, or you need a, you know, a speaker or something that here in town to talk hoops, because you know what, I'm in touch with coach through Coach vs. Cancer. I'm in touch with coaches all over the country and have a pretty good.
We got to get you
things and
all right,
and really like talking, you know, college hoops. So.
Great.
We'd love to have you.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
That was Scott Thompson here on 10:30 The Voice. Great show. Thank you very much. Let's take a quick break.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance company in Tucson.
For the month of July, we're going to donate 2% of our sales to a local charity from in-stock purchases.
Come shop at our store and work with our amazing sales team.
Dustin, David, Brian, Alex, me, and Peter.
You can choose from a list of local charities for us to donate to.
The only way we can give back is if you shop local.
Only at Tucson Appliance, where our low price is your priority.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply.
Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized by Forbes as one of Arizona's best credit unions 3 years in a row. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer low rates on loans, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit hughesfcu.org/best. Certain restrictions apply, insured by NCUA.
Hey, welcome back to Why on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. That was a lot of fun with Coach Thompson.
That was. You know, Scott was one of the great guys. I only knew him for that 1 year that I covered the team, the 86-87 season. But you could tell he was sort of the... guy who kind of held things together. You had Lute, who was sort of the CEO of it all. You had Kevin O'Neill, who was just a nut, right?
The nut of it all.
Ricky Birdsong, you know, Ricky and Kevin, I remember they shared an office at McHale. So you walked into that office and there were all kinds of shenanigans going on, and they're mostly caused by Kevin.
Yeah.
Ricky, a great guy who was just a calming influence. You could tell he was the guy that sort of was the guy who would put his arm around the players and help them through things. And Kevin was sort of an enforcer kind of guy. And Scott was sort of if I say he was the brains of it, that would imply that the other guys weren't smart.
Right,
and that's not what I'm saying.
I totally get it.
But he was sort of the intellectual guy of that, who kind of...
The soothsayer.
Right, sort of held all those things together and to allow Lute to just kind of run the show.
I'd ask Tom for a big word, but I'm not in the mood to get a big word from Tom. Hey, just real quick, because we've seen this, that the Zion Williamson stepfather took $400,000 in a payment before he went to Duke. It's a court filing things. So, and this is on ESPN, Mark Slabaugh. So is this, if you're an Arizona fan and you have history with Mark Slabaugh and his stuff that he's written about U of A, is this believable?
Well, here's what Arizona fans are going to do. They didn't want to believe the stuff that he wrote about Arizona, but they are going to believe the stuff he's writing about Duke.
Welcome to my point. Yes, exactly. My point.
That's exactly. But, you know, I don't know, you know, but on the other hand, you know, you've got some of these court filings and there's something going on over there.
Sure.
You know, who knows what it is? I don't know. I guess, you know, for anyone to think that Duke and everybody else isn't doing something, I think is incredibly naive. Mm-hmm. You know, even to say, you know, Arizona was doing something because Book Richardson got caught doing something. Mm-hmm. So we know that. You know, who knows what the extent of anything that was going on at Duke was. If Zion Williamson's getting $400,000, there's a big problem there. But
sure.
From where I sit, I don't know that, I don't care who I am and how much money I have, I don't know if I'm giving $400,000 to a high school kid.
Heck no.
You know, to a kid coming out of high school.
Whether you have money or you don't.
Whether I have that $400,000 between my couch cushions or not, I'm pretty sure I'm not giving it to a high school kid. So who knows what's going on over there.
Right, right. My whole point was exactly the way you took it.
But yeah.
What's believable if you're an Arizona fan?
Right.
Because he's written about Arizona. Oh, it's not believable.
Yeah.
And he screwed up some of the story. There's no question about that.
He did.
So there's some credibility issues there. But if it happens somewhere, what do you believe?
Right. But I want to see where somebody like Dick Vitale is on that. Because when Slabaugh wrote that stuff about Arizona, he was all over it. Sean Miller should be fired. Same thing with Jay Billis. Where are they now? I haven't heard a peep from either one of them about this stuff going on at Duke. And I'm sorry, I don't believe they're just trying to be more careful than they were
back then
with Arizona. I think that they're just playing to that.
Well, you have a grad.
And it is what it is.
You have a Duke grad and a guy who's in bed with the Duke.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. So that's where I kind of have a problem with some of this stuff.
I totally agree with you.
But I sure don't mind talking about Duke having issues.
Even
though my daughter's a Dukie now, as I've said before.
Will your college tuition end up to be $400,000?
God. You know what? I can't even imagine coming out of high school and somebody's going to throw $400,000.
You sure as hell ain't going to say no.
Oh, I'm not going to. What are you going to do?
Yeah. You say, okay.
You say, yeah, I'll take my $400,000. I'll go play for a year and get the heck out.
Yeah.
And whatever trail you leave behind you, burning, you know, stuff you leave behind you, so what?
I joke about this because I totally joke about this. So if U of A paid $8,000 and $10,000, that's kind of like the number that's been said, they got a deal.
Oh, they got a deal. Even if they paid him $100,000, they got a deal. Because, you know, oh, God, that, unbelievable that stuff that's going on. It's just crazy. But you know what? Again, this has been going on for 100 years.
Did you see the movie Blue Chips?
I love that movie, Blue Chips.
And it's kind of like, okay.
I love the end of that movie.
When he says, what the hell, I'm getting out of here.
When he says he quits. Spoiler alert. I love that movie. It's kind of a bad movie, but it's an interesting movie.
Because we see it. We've seen it.
We've seen it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Good show today.
Good show. I loved having Scott Thompson on. Thank you to Scott for joining us.
Yes. Yeah. Love talking to Scott. Very smart guy. Agree with you on his your analysis of him.
And let's see what the heck, you know, what dominoes fall by
tomorrow.
Tomorrow at 6:00. Join us and we'll find out.
As the world turns.
Exactly.
Hey, Tom, thanks a bunch. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening here on 1030 The Voice.